to Nick. I just wanted to say thank you for letting my dad be on the show. And I just wanted to add something to the show. And have a good, great evening. Done.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. Today, we're going to be joined by our returning guest, author Hans M. Hershey. We are diving into his latest book, Matt, More Than Words. He'll join us on the second half of the show. My name is Tom, and I am your host, and I'm here with the only co-host in studio today.
Hey, all, Nick or Trish.
And we would like to welcome you all to The Dish. We took a break last week, and there was a lot going on, some of which we're going to discuss today, but we needed to sort of kind of regroup. We didn't have a guest, so it gave us an opportunity to really take a break from all the craziness that was going on, ever since they started, counting and certifying the results for the Electoral College votes that came from all the states. And so we took a Monday off. We needed it. It was just intense. It was a very intense week.
Yeah, no, I am so over watching the news. Like, I cannot handle it. It's like coronavirus,
Trump,
insurrection. Like, I'm, what's going to happen with the inauguration?
Right,
like,
right.
It's like one thing after the next. And honestly, like, I love watching and taking in the news every morning, but lately I just can't handle it.
It's a little disturbing, though. Reason being,
6 fucking days into 2021.
Right. It's like, it was almost like 2021 said, like 2020 was like, oh, I did this, and 2021 said, hold my beer.
100%.
Like 6 days into it. And so I wanted to talk about that a little bit, right? So, you know, we're sitting here because I remember in past elections, we really never had a very, very large focus on the certification of the electoral votes in any presidential election in the past. I don't recall ever, like, paying attention to it.
We did with Hillary because I think we wanted her to win.
Well, we were talking about what could have been done when they went to cast those votes in the Electoral College. But I'm talking about the certification in Congress.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, for me, that was never a thing. And then all of a sudden, it's like, we thought, okay, so they finally called it for Biden. It's done. He's going to be the president. And then, you know, there was that craziness that all of a sudden
people were arguing against it. I'm like, he's the fucking president. Right. Like, your job is to provide your electoral votes to the college. Like, end of story.
And then all of this disturbing craziness just ensued. And so we knew that there were people there that were going to go protest. They were protesting in the National Mall, further down closer to the White House, where the, you know, President Donald Dump came out and gave a speech and said, you know, off you go to the Capitol. I'm coming with you. And he never did, by the way.
No, right back to his bunker.
Right. And then these people went to the Capitol, stormed it, broke into it, damaged it. A person was killed.
More than one.
Well, one person was shot while they were trying to get into the chamber of the House. And then a police officer died as a result of an injury that he received that someone threw a fire extinguisher at him. And then
they hit him over the head with it.
Right. So for me, I'm used to looking at the news and seeing stuff like this happening in places like Chechnya and, like, you know, some of the unsettled issues that were going on in places like, for example, Ukraine, when Russia had annexed Crimea and all of that stuff. And for me, it was just something that you don't see in the U.S. And for the first time in our nation's history, since about 1812, you had an attempt to actually take over our national government. And the most disturbing thing is to see how all of this is happening and somehow they are now not believing that they did this. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was Antifa. Or seeing images and the videos that are coming in and how they were acting and how they wanted to hang Trump and they were looking for Pelosi.
Uh-huh.
And how for the first...
You mean Pence?
Pence and Pelosi. They were screaming, you hang Pence. Trump. Hang Pence. And they were looking for Pelosi.
They literally put a noose out of the Capitol building.
Yes. And then the most disturbing image that I seen out of all of that to me was that for the first time in our nation's history, a Confederate flag was walked through the halls of our Congress. It was disturbing. And so needless to say, all of that, you know, all of the incitement that this president has asked of his supporters led to this insurrection.
Well, then we were watching it together. He went on and said, you know, made some address about the whole event. And that was the first time in his 4 years where I was like, and I looked at you and I said, who is this man?
Right.
That was the first presidential, like.
Clearly he was reading from a teleprompter.
Oh, 100%. But like, I was like, what the hell?
This was, right. Like, we were looking at each other like, who the hell are you?
Yeah.
Like, who is this person? This is an imposter, like the fake Melania that keeps coming up here and there. And I'm saying to myself, ew, David, like, who is this? Right? No. But in that same speech, he is condemning the events that took place, right? And for the first time acknowledged
that... But he was the one that incited it.
Right. And for the first time, he acknowledged that someone else was going to be president. Didn't concede. Correct. But he acknowledged it. But then... disturbingly, he turns around in that same address and turns around and says to them, you're good people. Thank you. I love you. Now go home.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah. No, I know. And I was listening to, I don't know if it was a podcast or an MSNBC interview, but it was something about how pretty much Trump has a militia army that he has created.
Right.
And that's something the Biden administration is going to have to deal with.
Right.
He literally has an army at his fingertips.
You know, and the thing is that when you think about Governor Whitmore in Michigan, right? When you think about Lansing and the Capitol and all the craziness that has occurred there in the last 10 months, this was a precursor to what was going to happen. And the evidence was there, but no one was listening, or at least none of the Republican people that are elected into these either state houses or in our House of Representatives or even in the Senate are caring. They didn't care. And then the fact that you have two senators and about 13 representatives in Congress that were calling and further inciting and perpetrating this idea that this election was stolen is just disturbing, to say the least. And, you know, this is where we're at. And now, you know, in 2 days from now, we inaugurate a new president, our 46th mm-hmm. president of the United States. That would be Joseph R. Biden. And, of course, our first woman of color to be elected vice president of the U.S., which is Kamala Harris.
And we did it, Joe. We did it. You're going to be president of the United States.
It was funny. And so, you know.
I honestly can't wait to hear what Hans has to say about that whole thing.
Right. Because I think he's been fairly vocal of our political issues on his page. So I think that at some point while we're discussing the book, we'll need to ask him how he feels about it.
Oh, 100%.
But, you know, the other funny thing is, too, that I had found or someone sent me a video that I posted on my personal Facebook page.
No, you?
Yeah. Oh, of course I did. And it is... Kamala Harris is in the video, and her niece.
Oh, yeah. I love this.
Auntie, I got your gift. Impeachments.
So she gives her a jar with some, like, I don't know, beans or something in it, and she's saying,
I think they were peach mints.
And auntie, they're impeachments. And she just starts cracking up. And I think it's funny because here we are, as a result of this insurrection, mm-hmm. as a result of what transpired in D.C. on January 6th, when everything was said and done and they regained control of the building, the senators and the House of Representatives went right back in and finished that job and they certified the election. Mm-hmm. But as a result of that, the president, hashtag not mine, just got impeached again.
But also, too, because of that whole event, a lot of Republicans, not a lot, but some Republicans flipped their opinion. I mean, when we're talking about Lindsey Graham, even though he's a dickbag.
Right.
I'm sorry. I said it. But
he almost got trampled in the airport.
He started talking and I was waiting for, you know, all the anger and negativity that Trump, you know, energy about him winning the, or, you know, him should be that he should be certified. And then all of a sudden he flipped and he's like, we cannot certify this man. Like this, these votes have got to go to Joe Biden. And I was like, what the fuck?
Well, in the end, he was like, I tried to save, you know, do right by these people. I'm done. That was like his last few words. Yeah. But then on the flip side of that, now he's going back out there and he met with the president shortly after that happened. And now he's again perpetuating this lie. And the president has yet to concede and still is out there even today saying that he won. You know, and then the best thing that came out of all of this is that the president got banned on everything.
Grindr.
He lost his Twitter. I think even like freaking Hamster or one of the porn sites. What is it? Oh God.
No, I think that was a joke.
I'm going to say it was real.
No.
Because it would be really hilarious if it was.
Well, so there was a newscaster talking about the situation, and behind him, obviously, he had the green screen with all of the emblems of all the things that he'd been banned on, and one of them was Grindr.
Right.
You know, the gay app. Obviously, everybody on the show knows what Grindr is, but I'm like sitting there, I'm like, oh my God, somebody, some writer must have been like, I'm going to throw it up there. I'm going to throw up Grindr. But really, Pence is probably the one that got banned from Grindr.
Right. Well, I doubt it. But, you know, because she needs to get her dick. Mama's not going to let her, you know, let him do whatever he wants. But it's disturbing. Mm-hmm. It really is. But, you know,
I'm nervous about Wednesday, honestly. Like,
but you know what makes me nervous? I'm happy that he's no longer on Twitter. I'm happy that he's no longer given a platform to spread his hate and to spread his craziness and his lies.
There is a platform that he has. I forget what it is.
Parler. That
yeah.
got shut down.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. It was on the server on Google, and Google completely shut it down. Apple took it out of the Apple Store, so you can't download it on okay. Apple or Google. But the disturbing part about that is that, you know, you have come to expect what this man is doing and what he's feeling like and what's in his head by just reading what he tweets. Mm-hmm. And now we don't know.
But, you know,
and that's a little unsettling to me.
My thing is, like, all these people that are so supportive of Donald Trump, right? All of these people that stormed the Capitol. I'm like, he doesn't give a goddamn shit about you. Like,
right.
He could care less about you.
Right.
And they're all like 100% behind him, like he actually won. I'm like, did you see us? We marched.
Right.
You know, we marched.
Right.
A lot of people did.
Right.
We didn't do anything stupid like that.
No. We weren't. We went down to D.C. to march for the Equality March. Mm-hmm. There was the Women's March for like 3 weeks after, which, by the way, had a lot more attendance than his inauguration ever will.
Mm-hmm.
It was our way of us peacefully protesting mm-hmm. and vocalizing our discontent for the fact that this man was even given an opportunity to get our country to this state.
Mm-hmm. I hope that
to where we are today,
the day Biden takes office, I hope that the LGBTQ page on the website goes back up. I feel like that would be so powerful for our community.
Right.
Also, not to continue on the insurrection bullshit, but the guy with the horns, he's all over the place.
Right. The shaman, the Q shaman.
Yeah, like no shirt on, whatever. He, and this is terrible to say, but I'm sorry. This man is a 33-year-old failed actor who still lives at home with mom.
Right. And ended up getting arrested. And mm-hmm. then he's complaining he wasn't eating. And he was complaining because they weren't giving him organic food. So to you, Mr. Q Shaman, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah, no, not at all. Also, who was it? There was another one. It'll come to me. I forgot. Keep going.
No, so you know, two important things to take away from this craziness. One, it didn't work. So, you know, we know that our democracy is strong, and I need to believe that in order to know that this nightmare that we've been through in the past 4 years was not in vain, and that the over 200,000 plus people that we've lost to the inefficiencies of this administration when it comes to coronavirus, that wasn't in vain, and that now, you know, we're moving into a new phase of being able to manage this pandemic and getting to where we need to be. Mm-hmm. But the important thing to take away from this is that we're looking at a president who got impeached for the first time ever in U.S. history for a second time. There is a better chance of him being convicted in the Senate, if that were the case, which is necessary in order for him to be technically removed from office, mm-hmm. even though his term ends in 2 days. But then with that, if he is convicted in the Senate of the charges that are brought to him or brought up against him for inciting insurrection, that if he gets convicted, the very next vote that happens immediately after that is a vote to permanently ban him from ever holding any office of
any government, state office ever again.
Or federal.
Yeah.
And so that would take him out of the equation into potentially running again in 2024, mm-hmm. and continuing with this crazy madness that keeps going on that we're seeing, you know, displayed all over the U.S. right now with his followers. Yeah.
I do want to give a shout out, though, because Representative Sean Patrick Maloney.
He
is so good looking.
Oh, my God.
From the District of New York, Hudson Valley, was literally ready to physically fight back. He turned, when this was all happening, he turned to his colleague, Colin Allred, who was a former pro football player, and he said, "Are you ready to fight these MAGA assholes?"
It's you know, imagine going to work, being a legislator, and arriving at your place of work to do the business of the people. And this happens, and you find yourself amidst an insurrection, and people are there to physically harm you. There was no doubt whatsoever were there to do harm.
Yeah, in my mind, like, I've been thinking a lot about the fact that there wasn't enough, you know, so today is Martin Luther King Day, which we haven't mentioned, which is important to mention, including the Black Lives Matter movement, where we have recently seen a lot of peaceful protests, some not so peaceful, like when we look at Seattle, there was some, you know, vandalism and whatnot. But when you look at those protests, we have the National Guard, we have an immense amount of police force. There were so many people to hold the protesters back and stop them from, you know, creating violence and doing things when they were trying to peacefully protest. Right. And we saw it here in New Haven.
A whole freaking park got gassed just so that the president could take a walk in front of a church, mm-hmm. and take a picture of himself holding a Bible.
Right. And here I'm thinking, all right, so we know that we have a lot of people that are aggressively angry and are going to protest. And there was, you know, Trump speaking to the group before the Electoral College was
and then posting that they were coming to D.C.
Right. And they were posting on social media and all this stuff. I'm like, why wasn't the National Guard pulled out and ready to go just in case beforehand? Right. Why did our government put the two, I believe, police officers that lost their lives in harm's way? I mean, if you look at the videos, I don't necessarily blame the police officers for backing off. They were outnumbered, like 100-1 more.
I have a feeling that this was, because you're right, the response to the Black Lives Matter movement and the way that they were mobilizing the National Guard in numbers that were scary, like 15,000 National Guardsmen and women were mobilized at the sound of Black people coming together and protesting.
And taking people off the streets in unmarked cars, like...
And all of a sudden, we have an entire national mall full of insurrectionists that stormed the Capitol and held control of this building for 2 hours, Mind you, it wasn't a 15-minute thing. This was 2 hours of nonstop people rummaging through the Capitol building while these senators and these representatives were locked up in an undisclosed location in that building.
Yeah. And what was that sweatshirt that one guy was wearing? Auschwitz.
6 million wasn't enough?
Yeah, 6 million wasn't enough. And then there was another one, and I'm like,
we literally fought a war.
You're an American. You're a fucking American.
Right.
We lost, I don't know how many people in World War II fighting a war to protect the Jewish community. How mm-hmm. the fuck are you going to get up there and do that? Your ancestors, people that made our country the country that it was 4 years ago, died. Thousands of people died. It was a world fucking war. And you're going to wear a shirt like that?
Right.
In the country that's considered, you know, the freest country and like...
Like, we literally joined that world war after Pearl Harbor was attacked to end the tyranny that was Hitler. And the craziness and the inhumane treatment of people that were in internment camps, the people that were killed, the thousands and thousands of people that were killed.
The kids that were ripped away from their families and the parents that were literally walked into a gas chamber off a train where they lost all their possessions, everything.
Everything. And here are these people promoting this bullshit. I'm sorry, you can slice and dice it any way you want, but this is a fucking hate group. This is a terrorist organization. It
Every
needs to be taken.
Every single person that supported that insurrection should be considered a terrorist.
And as such, the president needs to be, one, he needs to be, well, he's already been impeached. He needs to be convicted and then further put on trial for high crimes and misdemeanors outside of the constitutional commitments that a president can go through to get removed. But from a Department of Justice perspective, he needs to be tried.
Oh, my God, yeah. Needs to be locked up.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
And
I want to say two more things. Right. So I saw a meme the other day where, you know, I guess people have been saying, well, you know, Trump may have said some stuff, but he wasn't there. He didn't, you know.
He was there.
No, he didn't, like, walk into the, you know. He wasn't a part of the insurrection that, like, went in. Right?
Oh, but he told them he was going with them.
So I saw a meme that said, okay, you can say that all you want, but was Biden on one of the planes during 9/11? And Biden, Bin Laden? No, he was not.
But he masterminded.
Exactly. That's the point. And people need to realize that he was behind the whole thing no matter what. And that's why you're right. He needs to be tried. He needs to be jailed. I mean, I don't even know. He's technically a terrorist himself, in my opinion.
Right.
I think so.
Right.
But anyway, that being said, I saw another video of one of the insurrectionists trying to board a flight in an airport.
Right.
And he was put on the no-fly list
right.
because he was considered a terrorist.
Right.
And he was flipping out. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, bitch?
Then there's the she is a real estate agent from the state of Texas, I believe, who went and was photographed. And therefore, now they're looking at her, and she comes out and says, I was only following what the president said, and that he told us to go down there, and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you should have thought about this shit before you decided to go down there and storm the Capitol.
Yeah. I mean,
the fact that you have kids, the fact that you have a husband or a career. There was a doctor, for example, the person that was photographed in the chamber with ties, with zip ties to put people in restraints, went there with his mother, who happens to be a nurse, and they both got arrested. The man can be seen with a weapon. He had a weapon inside a federal building, along with zip ties to tie people up. Who was he going to tie up? He was there to literally physically restrain someone.
Ugh.
It's scary.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's sad that this happened because it really puts our standing in the world as one of the leading democracies in this world, promoting democracy around the world. We look like the laughing stock of this globe. It's sad.
We have for the past 4 years. I know. Yeah.
And it's all coming to an end. In 2 more days, we inaugurate a new president. There's a lot of stuff that on day one is going to be reversed. I'm super excited to keep a tally on those, including the Keystone Pipeline decision that was reversed in the Obama era. Biden is going to reverse what Trump did to allow them to actually go through with digging through sacred grounds in Native American lands to run that pipe.
Why?
He's going to reverse that decision. He's not going to allow them to continue to drill.
Good. You were confusing me.
Because right, like, Obama banned it. Trump allowed it. And now, with an executive order, Biden can reverse that decision that Trump made. So there's a lot of things that are going to happen. And sorry that it got political, but obviously it is the conversation of the time. It is something that we're living through history right now. And we need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because this is something that's going to be taught in history for years to come. So listen, we're super excited. It is 12:30, almost 12:30 in the morning in Sweden, which means that our guest stayed up late to be with us. We don't want to be disrespectful. So well, it's only Hans. But we are going to take a break. We'll leave you with some music. And when we come back, Hans Hershey will be with sit with us to talk about his new book. Here we go.
She was waiting by the back door, said, babe, we gotta leave town. Get your shit, get your suitcase, your dog, your guitar, cause we gotta go now, cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names, yes, they're coming, just the same. Well, I know you don't want to leave your life. You've had some blood and tears, little joy, little strife. They're coming, well, they're coming down the road. Yes, they're coming, truth be told. Don't forget the whiskey and don't forget your history. It was never their land in the first place, but they're coming just the same. A knapsack full of judgment, hypocrisy and lies. And they're talking so much hateful bullshit, they've begun to gather flies. But they're coming, well, don't look them in the eyes. Yes, they're coming, no surprise. And with so much terror in our past, how are you so surprised it's come to bite you in the ass? Yes, it's coming. Well, it's nipping at your heels. Yes, it's coming for the kill. And don't forget the whiskey and don't forget your history. It was never the land to sell or trade. No, don't forget the whiskey and don't forget your history. It was never the land. Station where we can get on that train, head out to the wastelands where we can change our names. Cause they're coming, well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming just the same.
All right, welcome back from the break, ladies and gents. I'm getting my hands all lotioned up, and we're just coming back. Yeah, I know. She went upstairs, and she just grabbed, like, the whole bottle of lotion and put it on her and said, like, here, give me your hands. I was like, ew.
I wash my hands so much. They're red. I need to lotion.
Oh, I know. It's crazy, all the washing that we do and how it just takes away from all of our natural juices. So anyway, welcome back from the break. That was, of course, Wastelands, the title track for the album Wastelands from Amanda Barrick. It's available on all the major music streaming services. Make sure that you go check it out because she's awesome. So we're trying to get connected to our dear friend, Hans, who's going to be joining us. So...
Ooh. Oh, that's loud. Hello.
Yes, it is. Let's see if he picks up, and then we can move on to our interview. So before we bring Hans on, I wanted to talk about a little bit about our opener.
Why am I not on the camera?
Yeah, I know. It's just weird.
Hans, turn on your camera. Hello? Hold on.
Wait, hold on. Hans, can you hear me? Hello? Okay, let's accept it. Let's see here.
Hi.
There he is. All right, so, well, I can't see you, but that's okay. Don't worry about it, honey. We can hear you.
Oh, hang on a second. I just need to turn on my camera.
Oh, there hey! He is.
All right, so before we jump into introducing Hans, I wanted to talk about our opener a little bit. So earlier today, Hans and I were having a little checkup, you know, just to make sure that we didn't have any hiccups, which we still ended up doing anyway. But this time it's not the intern's fault. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, it was.
And so Hans followed up our conversation with a very beautiful video of his son, Sasha, who sent us a little message. And so that little message that you heard as our opener today was Hans' son sending us, Chris, Nick, myself, wishing us a good show and thanking us for allowing his father to come on the show and talk about this amazing book that he's going to talk about. So, Hans, welcome back. It's been a while.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Another all-nighter from little me.
Well, you know, I mean, you're all the way on the other side of that ocean, you know, Sweden, to say the least. Gorgeous, beautiful country that it is. So, unfortunately, that's how we roll.
So, really yep. quick, tell us about your son. Why did he want to send us a message?
I told him that I would be on the show, and he wanted to be on it. He wanted to stay up. He wanted me to actually wake him up to be on the show, and I was like, honey, it's past midnight. There's like no way you're going to be on that show. and to say a bit about it, because we were, you know, Tom and I were talking about the children's book that I put out last summer, and Sasha was part of actually making that. So he said, yeah, well, I really need to talk to them about the book. And I said, just let me do it. He said, he kept nagging, and I said at one point, I just said, okay, come on, why don't you just record a greeting, and we can send it over to them, and maybe they can play it on the show. And I said, okay.
Well, we did, so you can play him the opener, but nothing else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think we were bad during the first half. We were talking a lot of about the craziness, the insurrection that happened on our U.S. Capitol and all the craziness that has ensued as a result of that, including the second impeachment of the current president and all that. So before we jump into our interview, let's get an outsider's perspective on the craziness that is our government right now. What are your thoughts, Hans, on all of it?
Where to begin? I don't know. I just cow feed. I mean, it's insane. You know, I think, like so many other people, we were glued to the TV when this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was kind of like 9/11 all over again.
Yep.
It was one of those moments you're not going to forget.
Right.
I can't really say that I was surprised because you know, last year, had the pandemic not happened and we would have been able to travel, we would not have traveled to the U.S. anyway last year. Because I said, you know, this election campaign, it's going to be violent. The actual campaign wasn't as bad as I thought it would be, but, you know, it just happened afterwards. But I had a hunch that things would be bad, and I don't think you've seen the worst yet.
No.
Unfortunately, but
I'm worried about Wednesday.
Yeah, you're not alone. But we'll see. I mean, at least the reign of Orange 45 is over in what? 2 days?
2 days.
So I just two days.
Well, one and a half days now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, it's just we're just what 200 pardons away from this?
Probably.
So
it's sad. I mean, it's just really bad. I mean, you know, you expect this kind of shit to go down in Russia. You don't expect it maybe in Brazil, you know, mm-hmm. but
right.
the U.S. Yeah, it's just so weird because, you know, I look at all the countries around me and pretty much most of us have tailored our constitutions after the United States one. And to see this sort of violence and just craziness, you know, I mean, it's just weird when you listen to these people. And I'm not just talking about Orange 45 himself, but I'm talking about, you know, some of the people in Congress, some of those senators, mm-hmm. 124 plus members of the House. And their talk of defending the Constitution.
They're not doing it.
No, I know, of course not. But I mean, that's the talk, right? And then you have all those crazy nut jobs out on the streets. And their talk of defending the Constitution. And you look at, did you even read that document, honey? I mean, honestly, really? I'm not a constitutional expert, but many of us have read the Constitutions many times over the last 6 months and all the amendments. And does it really say that? Does it really say that? I mean, you know, but, and it's weird because the U.S. Constitution, having been written as long ago as it has, mm-hmm. it's a very ambiguous document. Mm-hmm. You know, you have constitutional scholars, which we've all been listening to from both sides over and over, and there's very rarely a definitive answer on things. But the integrity of the election, which has nothing to do with the Constitution itself, but when you look at processes that have been in place for hundreds of years, and they have been pretty much undisputed since, what, 1860?
Since the beginning,
it's just
really,
weird.
Yeah.
It's just weird, you know? I mean, yeah, it's let's just hope it gets better from Wednesday on. And that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of bugs that need to crawl back under the rocks from whence they came, but
those bugs need to crawl into a volcano and burn and just disappear.
Yeah, I think that's about, I mean, some of them are more going to die because, you know, a lot of the people who voted for this current regime are relatively old and white, and we all know they're a dying breed, which is part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Because they obviously don't like the development, the browning of the United States, so to speak. But so I mean, there is hope. But yeah, I mean, there have always been a lot of crazies in your country, probably more so than in many other countries for a gazillion different reasons, because a lot of crazies have left Europe because they wanted to go to a place where there was
crazy.
More hope, more liberty. Yeah, I mean, well, that was part of it. I mean, if you look at some of the religious groups that left Europe for the U.S., I mean, yeah, they are what they are, right?
Indeed they are. So thank you for pitching in a few excerpts of what you think our craziness right now is, and we appreciate it because we agree 1,000%. But nonetheless, it is what it is. And we hope that, you know, we can, moving forward, that we can turn the page on this crazy, crazy chapter.
I hope that we can try and find a way to unite our country again, because right now it's so divided and so terrible.
Right, right. Speaking of turning the page and mm-hmm. chapters and books.
Oh, wait, you're an author. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
He didn't come on the show to be our political pundit. He came on the show to actually talk about his book that you wrote. Now, this is not a new release for you. You released it last year, March. It just so happens that we finally caught up with you and were able to sit down and have a good chat about Matt, More Than Words, which was a book, again, you released it last year, and we're having you on to talk about this book. I had an opportunity, you sent it over, I started listening to the audio version of the book, which is great because I don't take micro naps, which is awesome.
Well, I'll have to tell Michael that you didn't fall asleep.
I didn't actually. As a, just so
he's great.
Yeah. So you have a knack for picking really good people to narrate your books. Now, I have listened to many audiobooks. Most recently, after the ending of Game of Thrones, I went back and purchased all of the audiobooks and started listening to the series all over again. I find that the person that was doing the narrating in these books rather exhausting, right? In the sense for the Game of Thrones books. Mm-hmm. And so it's very hard to focus when you when the voice that you're listening to annoys the shit out of you. And so,
oh yeah,
try doing the podcast every week,
right? And listening to the screeching thing next to me. But you know, when I think about the people that you've selected, Vance Bastian, you're talking about, for example, using the current narrator that you did for this book. When you listen to their voices, there's something about their voice that draws you in. That takes you into that story, and that's important. Can you talk about that a little bit? What your process for choosing people to do work with you?
So far, I've had three different voices to work with. The third one, let me start with the third one, because I never actually thought that book would be finished. It's the one that plays out in Korea. The return to the land of the morning come. Where are you? Up here. This one. Oh, I just got this one done. I have to actually edit it now. So the whole book has been narrated. And when the main character in this book is an older black man. He's an octogenarian. So he has a very distinct voice. At least I thought so in my head.
Right.
So I was looking for a very distinct voice. It was not Vance. And it wasn't Michael. And so I started looking for this voice and kind of found some people. So you can do these kind of almost like auditions on ACX, the company that does all the books for Audible. And so I got this voice, and he's not actually African-American himself. He's Latino, if I'm not mistaken. And I use Latino in a very broad sense, but so I'm not actually sure. He's from Texas, but I'm not sure what, but based on his name, he seems to be Latino. But he had the perfect voice, you know, to kind of encapsulate what I envisioned Martin to be, this older gentleman. The way I came across Michael was slightly different, because when I did, I first met Michael when I did my very, very first audiobook for Family Ties, which was incidentally my very first novel that I published. And after having published 10 or 12 books or even more, I said, you know, I heard about these audiobooks and that they were taking off. And I said, okay, well, if I do audiobooks, I don't want to start with my bestsellers. I want to start with the first one. That was kind of like me, right? Mm-hmm. Being boxed, squared. And so I figured, let me start with the first one and I'll do one after the other. So I started with Family Ties, and I was looking for, I didn't want to use one of the big names in the industry because I wanted a voice that was unique to me. I mean, I would have loved to do it myself, but yeah, no, I couldn't. That's just not me. And so I started to look, and I did auditions, and I'm telling you, that was 2016, 2017, and I got a bunch of submissions. I mean, we're talking about, I had like 50 submissions for this book.
Wow.
And I started listening, and I was weeding out a lot of, because I was just, not because they did a bad job. Some of these guys were doing amazing jobs at reading. It's just, no, I just didn't like the voice. There was just something with the voice that I didn't like, and, or that I didn't think was suitable for me and the kind of work that I was doing. Because at the time I was thinking that I would be releasing these books relatively in a relative quick succession of each other. And then I started to talk to some of my friends and my publisher, and I had weeded them down the auditions to about four. And at the time, Vance was not part of this. And so we had decided on a couple of voices, and I was about to make an offer to one of them and had closed the audition. when this email came in from this guy in New York, and he said, oh, shoot, I just missed the submission deadline, you know, but here's my promo reel. Would you, if you're interested, please listen to it and get back to me. And I started listening to this, and I just dropped everything. I was just like, this is my voice. This is me. And that was Michael Backinson. And Michael is an actor. He's done some, you can look him up on IMDb. I've seen him in Madam Secretary. He played a diplomat somewhere in Africa when she does a trip to Africa, and he's in one of those countries. He receives her at the airport. He has a light, tiny little show. He does work on Broadway, off Broadway, but he's also doing some narrations for books, for audiobooks. And so that's how we met. And after he did Family Ties, we actually met up in New York. He lives there in Upper Manhattan with his wife and daughter, and he's an amazing person too. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I had to pay for his work, and he's not cheap, and so I didn't have the money to do more at the time. And then Vance came along from more of the gay side of the industry. Mm-hmm. And we met through people in my publishing company,
right?
Or not my publishing company, but my publisher. And so he came highly recommended, and we started talking, and that's how I came to work with Vance for a bit. But he's been really busy, and so when it was time for Matt, I just reached out to Michael and said, listen, I think you would be really good for this. And so, yeah, that's how I ended up working with Michael again.
Well, the voice, like I said, is incredible. It draws you in. It really just does a great job at highlighting and encapsulating what this character, Matt, is going through, right?
Well, all the characters that...
Well, right, all of them, but specifically the main character, because one of the hardest things to do is to encapsulate what someone sounds like when they've never spoken before.
Exactly. I mean, that's what the whole point... that's what the book is actually about. You know, it is about someone who's unable to communicate. Not just not talk. He's not able to communicate, period.
Right.
So speaking of that, give us a little background of what Matt is about.
Well, Matt came to me while I was out there on a walk. That specific day, I wasn't listening to you guys. for once, when I was walking and walking into trees, but I was out there. I still remember exactly the location where I was when he appeared to me, and I just saw this person sitting in a wheelchair. Okay, this is weird because obviously he's in my head, right? So, and he tells me in my head that I want you to tell my story. And then I started listening to him. And so he tells me that here I am. I have this illness, which keeps me restrained to my wheelchair. I can't leave my wheelchair, and I cannot communicate with the outside world. So everybody thinks I'm a vegetable, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm a living, breathing human being. I have thoughts. I have emotions.
I'm not brain dead.
No, I'm not brain dead. I'm actually quite normal. I'm intelligent. You know, I hear, I understand what people are telling me. I just cannot respond.
I think that's my favorite part of listening to this book or reading this book is kind of hearing Matt's story, but nobody else hears it. I think that's my mm-hmm, favorite right. part. But there's so much heart-wrenching moments for Matt throughout this entire book. And I'm listening to it, and I'm like, how in God's name did you come up with some of this stuff? I mean, like, because some of it I'm like, what the hell?
Please don't bring up that one.
I'm not
that
going
one
to,
scene
but,
that we yeah, discussed.
I'm not going no. to, but like, but the reality is some of the things that happen in the book actually do happen in real life, but where did, like, how did you write this, or like, how did your brain think to explore what this individual probably went through?
You know, well, first of all, even though everything I write about is fiction, everything that happens to Matt in the book has happened to real people in real life. So it's unfortunately, and I'm not sure if you've read the foreword, which was written by a speech therapist that I got to know during my research here at the University of Gothenburg. They're one of the leading speech therapy centers in the world. And talking to her, when she read the first, she was one of the first people to read the draft manuscript. And she came back to me and she said, everything you write in this book happens and has happened to people around the world. So I'm not sure which scene, whether you're referring to the sexual abuse or mm-hmm. something else.
That was the biggest shocker for me.
Unfortunately, it's not a shocker. This is actually fairly common.
In
real life.
The reality is, yes, you're right. And I know it to be common, but hearing it, not expecting it, knowing that the character that comes in that creates that situation, like the moment he comes into the story, I felt the negativity. I felt he wasn't a good person, but I never expected what happened to actually happen. And I was literally like jaw dropped listening to the book.
Her exact comments was like, I was listening to this right before I walked into the deli, and I was literally in a space when I walked into the deli.
All day.
Because of what he was describing. And to me, so for me, so far, as far as I've gotten today, mm-hmm. for me, what I feel is that it's, you start to see someone who is boxed or put in a box and said, this is everything that you're always going to be for the rest of your life, right? Expectations or the lack of from the mother, for example, and how she assumed that there was no way that he would ever get to the point where he would be able to communicate effectively with anyone. Mm. And so she boxed him up. And any attempt by anyone to try and find a way to communicate with Matt, she would shut down because she had already put herself and her son in that box. And so as you start progressing and you start the introduction of other characters that come into his life, and then his like realization that he felt that in some way there was a connection with someone, and he's now going to start being able to use certain little things to communicate, and how attuned the person taking care of him was to the way he was reacting to certain things. Like, for example, when he was reading a book, or when he was touching him in a certain way, when he would grab his face and he would shut his eyes because he knew that he was safe, that whatever was going to happen next was something that needed to happen, but he was in a safe space and it made him felt calm and things like that. Like, all of those things were amazing. I haven't gotten to the part where you're at, mm-hmm. and I feel that when I get there, I'm probably going to be very upset. But again, it's being able to see his reawakening of his communication style. That point in part in early on in the book is just so incredible, the way you tell that story, that I feel that what comes next is going to be very, very chilling for me. And I'm not ready.
Well, I also think, too, that like, how hard is it for you as an author to put yourself in that place? I mean, when I'm listening to this book, I'm like understanding. I can look at somebody in that situation who has cerebral palsy, or whatever it is, and can't communicate. It's like I'm feeling for them and seeing them for the first time. Like, how do you put yourself in that place to write these words?
The easy short answer would be empathy. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the things that you need as an author, or playwright, or, mm-hmm. whatever, screenwriter, is to be, you need to be able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes, which is empathy. You need to try to imagine what is it like, to live another life. And that is something that a lot of human beings are capable of doing, and some of us are better at it than others, and some of us are also able to express that in writing. Now, but it's not just a capability or a capacity to do that, which is unique to me. I mean, I know that I'm very empathic, and it comes easy to me to put myself in other people's shoes or feel other people's emotions. That alone is not enough. It also takes a lot of research, because you don't want to go wrong, right? So you also want to make sure that you do that person credit. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, for me, it started out, and again, you know, this is when Matt first came to me, I didn't know what illness he had. So it was up to me to find out. And that was difficult research. It was embarrassing research at time, because I had to reach out to clinics and places that look after people with very rare diseases and ask them some really stupid questions. I mean, I did not feel very cocky when you sent those emails and you make those phone calls and you talk to those people. And not everybody understands why. It's really weird. You know, sometimes you ask, you know, I remember there's this one place that we have here in Gothenburg where they treat people with rare diseases. That's actually the name of the institution. Is they're called after a farm where the hospital is located, and their tagline is, "We treat rare diseases." So I reached out to them because somebody said they would be a good place to start. And they just basically told me to go on a hike. You know, it's just like, no, we're not doing that. You know, this is too risky, and we can't do that. And I'm like, why? I'm just trying to tell a story. But yeah. So it's difficult, because people obviously feel that I might be, I don't know, wanting to capitalize on the story or whatever, and maybe they don't understand that this is a fictional character, even though you tell them. Blah, blah, blah. So that was the most difficult aspect, which took me probably 2 to 3 months just to figure out who Matt was. At first, it was also, do you really want to do this?
Yeah.
Because this is not, it's not easy to write, because I obviously knew where this was going. I knew that it had to entail some fairly dark moments, because nobody else tells these kinds of stories, you know? So usually the kind, but there are other people. There's a movie about a woman who has a similar affliction to Matt's, and there's a YouTube video of her story. It's really difficult to watch. That is really difficult to watch. And then there's a story from a guy in South Africa who had a normal childhood until he was about 10 or 12. And then he got really sick and he lost everything. So he was in this nebula for some time. And he wrote the book himself after he got back out of it. And I did read the book. There's also an audio version of it. And I found that difficult, because I'm not supposed to review other people, but yeah, I found that not the most uplifting of books. Mm-hmm. But it is, it's really getting to understand someone like that. Is you have to see people like that out on the street. It was actually quite funny. About a month after I was done with the first draft, I was going to see my husband, and I have to take, because we only have one car in the family, so I took the ferry, and then I had to take a tram, and then I had to hop on a bus. And when I got on that bus, there was a man sitting in a wheelchair with his personal assistant. And the guy in the chair, he was unable to talk. But unlike Matt, he was able to communicate with a laser light. So people who have communication difficulties, there's a lot of different methods, which is another funny thing I learned. There are a ton of different ways for these people to communicate. Mm-hmm. And this particular man, he was using a red laser light to point to syllables he had on a tray in front of him attached to the wheelchair.
Right.
So he could point with his light to the words in front of him and communicate that way. But it was so interesting. And for a while I was like, almost wishing the trip wouldn't end, so I could actually see his interaction with his assistant, because at the time when we were on that journey, they didn't talk, and I had the impression the man was relatively tired because his head was bobbing similarly to Matt's, and the red light on his forehead was going all over the place in the bus. But I knew that if he needed to, if he wanted to, he could focus enough to, you know, really direct the light where he needed it to go, which is something that Matt wasn't able to do.
Right.
So I had to really find, I didn't have to come up with a way of communication, because that was something that I learned when I studied at the Institute with the lady who wrote the foreword for the book eventually. But I had to come up with a way for Matt specifically, because he's unique. There's nobody like him. I had to come up with a way for him specifically to use a body part, because everything else had been tried, right, and been dismissed, and which is one of the reasons, like you say, Tom, his mom eventually gave up. But I had to come up with a way for Matt to break out of his shell, you know, and it ends up to be his toe.
Now, in the book, obviously, you're a gay author, and most of your stories have gay characters.
What?
Yeah. I mean, this is a gay show.
He's gay?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Ew,
no.
David.
Oh, sorry. Stop. I forgot. Yeah. But Matt, I mean, he doesn't, I don't think he identifies as gay. I don't think he really understands what that concept is. There are characters that identify as gay in the book, identify as bisexual in the book, but there is a character in the book where Matt does love in a different way than he would love his mother. And I'm wondering why and how that was, like, how did you create that story and why was that so important to tell?
I'm a gay author, like you mentioned.
Right. Oh, wait.
And
yeah, that's right.
We need to end this conversation right now. He's gay. Like, really?
I'm so gay.
We know.
But yeah, so obviously to me, ever since I started writing books, it's not been about writing gay books, but I've always wanted to write books or stories that I myself would like to read. And, you know, whenever you see people write about difficult topics or unusual topics, they're usually written from a straight point of view or a non-sexuality or whatever you want to call it, gender identity. It's not part of the equation in the first place, right? And one of the things that I find very interesting is when I write about a character. And if you look at, if we just go leave this for the gay part for a moment, if we talk about race or
I was literally just thinking that, because until a certain point in the book, one of the main characters, I imagined as a Caucasian male.
But I think this is a pattern for you, right? Because you did the same thing in returning to the book that we just talked about. When I read the book,
to the Land of the Morning Call.
Right. It wasn't until like halfway through, or like probably like three quarters of the way through, that you realize that the character that you're talking about is a person of color.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I often do that on purpose these days, right, because I know we have this bias, and it's not just white folks who have that bias, but it's people of color have that bias too.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be going into a book and read the story and just simply assume that everybody's white, because, you know, why not? Everybody's white. You know, you turn on television and, or at least it used to be that way. Everybody was white. And so they even people of color whitewash everything. And so for me, that was part of the reason why, you know, why Timmy, Matt's personal assistant, is a person of color, and why I try to make sure to include a diverse cast. So every character is very, I'm very meticulous about that, to make sure to have as much diversity in my books, not just to tick off a box, because I genuinely believe it's important. I find stories that include people of color or a diverse cast, mm-hmm, so interesting, yeah, you know. And it's funny. I mean, I'm not sure if you guys seen The Mandalorian.
Yes.
or, you know, Star Trek Discovery. You know, I mean, the last season, there's literally not a single white person in that show. And I'm like, yes, girl, it's amazing. You know, The Mandalorian, I don't think the entire season three has a single white person in it. Not one. Lots of aliens, but not a single white person. I love that. And it's not, the storytelling doesn't suffer at all. You know, it's not like I miss it. But anyway, coming back to Matt and being gay, I mean, for me, it was, I just want to tell stories, even if they're difficult. And you know, I've written some really, really difficult stories about very, very difficult subjects, including sexual abuse and even pedophilia. Mm-hmm. But I write them from a gay point of view. Mm-hmm. And so Matt, no, he's not gay. We don't really know because he doesn't have the capacity, as you say, Nick, to express that, or it doesn't really come up. But at some point he falls in love with Timmy. Mm-hmm. Whether he would have fallen in love with somebody else, with a female assistant, I don't think so. That's not how I know Matt. But yeah, why label him? It doesn't really matter. But to me, it was also important that because when you see people with disabilities or you know impairments that are really severe, we typically don't give them the right of a sexuality of their own.
Right.
And people who are very sick, whether it's physically or mentally or whatever, we just simply assume they don't have any sexuality. And then we're all shocked when they do, you know, and you find out, ooh, how did they get pregnant? But when they do, and when they do have sex or have a sexuality, again, society pretty much automatically assumes, yeah, of course they're straight. Why wouldn't they be straight? And so I thought it was important to me as a gay storyteller to make sure that, nope, it doesn't have to be, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. And Matt,
you know,
and the way it's described, it's almost like Matt is kind of learning what love is and realizing that the love he has for Timmy is different than the love he has for his mom, Martha, and it's deeper and stronger. And I think that is the way it's described in the book, it's very powerful and it's very visceral and real. I also think that it's really powerful that you go outside of Matthew to talk about Timmy and his past relationship with another gay man, a friend of his, and talk about the difficulty of being a bi man dating a gay man and what mm-hmm. a lot of people, I feel like, in our community face.
Right.
I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that, but I thought that was really powerful. Just to like kind of get to know Timmy a little bit more.
Yeah. Timmy's relationships... I mean, I know a lot of bisexual people, and so I understand their struggle a little bit, how difficult it is to come out as bisexual. And when you are in a relationship with someone of your own gender, you know, everybody kind of assumes, okay, so you've come out as gay now, you know, did you right. finally make that choice, you know, And I understand the frustration of being bisexual and think, no, I just happen to be in a relationship with this person right now. And so your next relationship is going to be with somebody of the other mm-hmm. sex. If you're bisexual, is that how it works? Like one each, you know, and that's not how it works. And that's right. very frustrating for everybody who's not bi to understand. And I wouldn't claim to understand it fully. Mm-hmm. But because I'm not bi, it's different. And I just wanted to highlight, I wanted to make sure that Timmy was not just a stereotype. I wanted to give him that breadth and that diversity because that's just who he is. I can't help it. He's right. bisexual. He's not gay.
I mean, hell, so, people in our own community still don't even know that bisexuality is a real thing and it is allowed. And that there are people out there that straddle the line of both sides of the spectrum, and that is okay, Right.
And it's to a large degree. I mean, obviously, to a lot, the biggest fault lies with society, right? Because had it been completely acceptable to be gay or bi or pan or whatever, we wouldn't have this discussion. The problem is that because it is so disgusting. I mean, I remember when I grew up, I have met a lot of guys in my days who came out to me as bisexual when you first met them. And then 6 months later, they had progressed in their coming out and suddenly they were gay. So this is not uncommon.
Right.
So, but it's because society is so, you know, so being bisexual was somehow
a buffer.
Less, it was a buffer because there was still 50% chance that you might end up with a woman and conform to societal norms and expectations and what have you. But they were gay from the get-go. They just kind of left one half of the closet closed. So, and that hurts bisexual people.
100%,
so,
yeah.
So when gay men say, when gay men meet bisexual people who say they're bisexual, and a lot of gay men go like, yeah, or gay people, even lesbians go, meh, you know, I'll give you 6 more months and you're out of the closet. It's not always because we don't believe there are bisexual people. It's because we've all been there and we've seen people who actually have taken that second step and come out as gay eventually. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not everybody does. And I think that's the problem, because some people just simply, and it's almost like a form of racism, mm-hmm. you know, when you stereotype people and you cannot see how people can evolve, or the fact that some people are genuinely bisexual, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And I also think you speak to something, I can't remember the term you used, something about boobs. I can't remember exactly what the term was.
Boob envy?
Yeah, boob envy. So when I used to say I would never date a bisexual guy because, well, what if one day they want to be with a woman? Like, I can't give them that. I don't have the parts, right? There are moments in the story that depict that so clearly, that gay men are almost afraid to put themselves in a situation with another individual that considers themselves bi.
Well, the thing is, too, we have to remember that as a human, whether you're bisexual, straight or not, you still have the capacity to be in a monogamous relationship if you so choose. And so that as long as there's discussion and that there's an open conversation between you and your partner, that the exploration or the possibility of exploring other people and other sexes or the other sex is okay as long as that conversation is had. But in the scope of monogamy, if you're in a committed you know, gay relationship or a man-to-man relationship, and you're a bisexual person and you're still feeling the need to explore sexuality with a woman, yet you're still letting someone believe that you're in a committed relationship, then the issue is not that he's missing something. The issue is that he doesn't have respect enough to have that conversation with that other individual and say, you know what, I don't want a committed relationship because I want to straddle the line and be both and have an experience sexual with both. Or maybe perhaps could we have the conversation of being in a threesome?
Did you just have a moment where, are you enlightened now? Like, I feel like...
I feel like Moira Rose just came down and just said, speak, darling, speak.
On the fated flap of a butterfly's wing.
Right. And so I just think that, you know, when it comes to relationships, communication or the lack of could lead to the potential of someone who's bisexual. And again, I'm not going to pretend to know what it's like to straddle both and sort of kind of, you know, causes issues as a result of...
like you said, the problem isn't being bisexual. Cheating on your partner is not a factor of bisexuality.
Correct.
Cheating of your partner is a factor or a function of being an asshole
and lack of respect.
Yeah, but, you know, I once I wouldn't call it dated, but I once had an online kind of discussion with someone, and he was really, really wanting to meet with me and have sex with me. And he was a married guy, so he was married, and he kept telling me, yeah, but I can't just be with a woman. I need to be with a guy too. And I'm like, yeah, well, then good for you. But that just, it's just not me. And, you know, I don't want you to cheat on your wife. I just, you know, I don't want to be the other woman or the other guy. But I mean, you know, this isn't just a bisexual thing. This is as much a gay thing. I've met gay guys who were in committed relationships who cheated on their boyfriends. And I've met husbands, and I know plenty of husbands who cheated on their wives.
Oh, don't we all?
No, I mean, it's just, you know, just this Christmas, when we went to see my dad over the holidays, the same day we left the house, I got a phone call from a neighbor of mine asking us if we minded if they let somebody sleep in our house for a few days, because this woman had been cheated on by her husband. And so she needed a place to stay for a few nights with her three children. So obviously this is a thing, right? People cheating on each other, but it's not a function of your sexuality. I think that's important to say. Right. So in defense of bisexuals.
No, it's a function of your desire. And if you're desiring something that someone can't give you, you need to be respectful and have a conversation with that person.
Yes. Yes. I think this is also important. It's not about something that somebody else cannot give you. It's not about boob envy. I mean, it can be if you have a really low self-esteem, like our character in the book. But, you know, for bisexuals, not all bisexuals have this drive that, okay, if I'm in a relationship with a guy, I automatically need somebody on the side. I need the side dish that has boobs and a vagina. No, that's not how it works.
Yeah. Right.
You know, they're fully capable of monogamy if they want to.
Yeah, I personally think that a lot of bi individuals are now moving more toward the pan concept or the pan stereotype, the name or the, you know, label, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not about the gender. It's about the emotion, and it's about the love. And that's what I love about pansexuality, is I think that it describes what we have thought bisexuality is for so long. And the main reason I brought that up, I have one more question about the book before we move on, but the main reason I brought that up is because there are so many layers to this book, and there are so many stories going on, and they're all such intense, beautiful stories. But I want to talk a little bit about Martha, which is Matt's mother. And I'm struggling with her right now. So she is so protective of her son, and is so quick to fire somebody or make a phone call or, you know, get rid of, an assistant. But now here comes along somebody who's actually hurting her son, and she's blind to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's boggling my mind. Like, how did you create the? Is it because she's falling in love with this? I'm like, she's blind to the fact that her son is literally going through some traumatic stuff.
Well, I mean, but that's true in a lot of cases. That's true in a lot of events that people experience that are traumatic, and where the outside world is not really looking at you. They have blinders on what really is going on. It would be no different than any case, for example, in where a parent brings in a lover. And then this particular individual starts molesting their children. And because she's having this amazing relationship, so she thinks, with this guy, she and the child comes and says, hey, mom, this happened. She's like, no, you're lying.
Right. No. Right? And I hear you. Right. But so I want to talk about the development of Martha, because the reality is Timmy was let go for something that I don't believe he should have been let go for. Meanwhile, one thing happened that was very visible to Timmy that affected, you know, him personally. And, like, not to spoil anything, but he got a sunburn and he had another injury. Those are visible things. Those are things that clearly the caretaker did wrong.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But if it were but me, yeah, that is a fireable thing. Right?
Well, you know, it's complicated. I think writing Martha, and especially what we're talking about right now, the aspects of how can she not see what is going on with her son, were the parts of the book that I found the most difficult ones, not in writing, but in the editing process. This is one of the books that I've spent the most time on. It took me, just the editing process alone was a good 6 months. Because I had to constantly rewrite and go back, and would you really fall for that? You know, and there were a lot of discussions going on with people. I mean, would somebody really fall for that kind of ruse? Because that's what it is. I mean, Colin is a con man, first and foremost.
Right.
And he has all the attributes of a con man. He has exceptionally good looks. He has certain attributes that make people focus on certain. I mean, his eyes are very special, and people look for that. And he apologizes. He actually, you know, he steps ahead of the tsunami, and he tells Martha, "Look, I screwed up. We had too much fun today." And how is she going to second guess it? Because Matt's not going to tell her, is he?
Right.
So he basically, Colin steps up and says, "Look, we had a little bit of fun in the yard today, and we got carried away, and shit happened, and he has a sunburn." You know, even though it's not the truth, but it's credible enough to her that she sort of kind of buys it. You know, and she's at the point when Colin steps into their lives. Martha is at her lowest point. She's basically given up hope on Matt.
Right.
And as a parent, that says a lot, because, you know, as a parent myself, I cannot imagine ever giving up hope on my son. Mm-hmm. But Martha's come to this point where to even survive as a human being, to just keep going, she has to completely numb herself. She has to completely, you know, disconnect from all emotions related to her son. And I think that was kind of like the prerequisite. And that's why she reacted so strongly to what she considered Timmy's betrayal.
Right.
Because she just simply could not take it that anybody would come to her and raise hopes that there was hope left for Matt. She just couldn't deal with that, you know.
But there is another layer there too, where it's almost as though Martha is kind of attracted to Colin and allowing her inner wants and needs to kind of erase the reality of what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. Or that's the con man.
Right.
Yeah. But that's the con man.
And that's also a very common strategy, for example, in battered women that are constantly or continuously are being beat or hurt by their significant others. That is a strategy that they use to continue to be able to intimidate women, especially that are abused, into thinking that, you know, you were wrong.
Right. No, I know.
And so it's just interesting to see, right? Because, you know, my mother was a battered woman for many years. And I have struggled internally with that and spoken about, you know, her struggles in life. But, you know, my main thing, my main frustration with my mom is like, how many more times does this need to happen or continue to happen before you realize that this is wrong for you, dangerous for you, and dangerous for us? It needs to stop.
I mean, it's with some people, it's a pattern. You know, it's lack of self-esteem, lack of self-worth.
Right.
Where you define your own worth through the eyes or actions of somebody else, where you gain. And, you know, I mean, just look at Orange 45. I mean, he's the classical con man, and you've got millions and millions of women out there.
I know.
Who suck it up. And I mean, I just, you know, and it's for the rest of us, it's completely unimaginable how anybody can can see anything in that guy, right? Because he's neither attractive nor very smart nor anything, but he has that certain quality to draw people in, you know? Right. And he does it differently with men and women, but obviously women fall for him again and again and again, both in his personal life or when he feels the need to grab something, or in his politics or con schemes. I mean, you know, it's just so there are some people who are very good at conning, but there's also a segment of the population out there who are, I don't know why. I'm pretty sure the reasons why are very individual, but who are just a sucker for falling into that same trap over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And unless they deal with the underlying reasons why, they go into therapy and understand that, you know, they are worth just in and by themselves,
right?
Without needing the validation from somebody else, they'll fall right back into that trap.
But that's also a tactic of the oppressor, right? Of the person perpetuating. That is a tactic that they use. They put you down to the point where you don't believe that you alone are capable of being able to survive on your own, right? And so when you think when you think about what you're describing, this relationship, for example, with Martha, she's been a mother. She has resigned to the fact, or at least boxed herself in with at the idea that her son is never going to be able to communicate effectively with anyone or in any way. And when what you're describing, this emotional connection with this individual who's supposed to be caring for her son takes place, because she's already put her son in a box and put her life and situation surrounding her interactions with her son in a box, she is blinded at the fact that this individual can do all this harm and she not see it.
100%. I think that was my point. And why I wanted to talk a little bit about Martha. But that being said, this book is amazing. There are so many layers. And I guess listening to it, I'm like, what do you want to come from this book? Like, what are you hoping somebody can take away from this?
You know, every time I write a story, whether it's the one about Korea or Matt or the Golden One, it doesn't really matter. What I take away is, you know, from the Golden Trilogy, I took away this love for Mother Nature,
right,
and the respect for what's around us, and that still resonates with me. I mean, I just those three books changed the way I look at everything that's around me, and still does. I go out in nature with a very, very different respect, you know, and to this day, I still, you know, try to not step on an ant by accident.
You know,
which is difficult.
It's funny that you said that, but during COVID, when everything got shut down and dolphins were swimming in the Italy Hudson again and all that stuff, all I could think about was the Golden One.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, was an amazing, amazing series of books. I listened to all three, and I have all three hard book covers signed by the author, which I love.
So to go back to Matt, yeah. I think with Matt, what I have achieved for myself, and I don't have any desires or false pretense that this is going to affect anybody else that way, but that's how it affected me, is that I have a different understanding for people who live with impairments, mm-hmm. whether they are physical or mental, but I have a much greater respect for their humanity because I've had to live in their shoes for a good year or so.
Right.
Not physically in their shoes, but at least mentally and emotionally, I've lived with Matt in my head for a very long time, and it's changed how I look at people with physical, emotional and mental impairments, and I think that that by itself has hopefully made me a better person.
Right.
I think this book is written so well and is so deep and layered that I mean, it's doing the same thing for me. I mean, just the first, I don't know, 15 chapters, I'm already looking at people with disabilities in a different way. Right. Because before this book, I would have never thought that someone who I know that has the same affliction would be thinking the way I'm thinking every day.
Mm.
But not being able to say, hey, this is what's going on. So the book, I mean, you lived with it for over a year. I've been, you know, with it for 2 days, and it's already changing the way I think about people with disabilities. So you definitely hit the nail on the head with this one.
Well, and, good. And I think that that's all you can ask. If someone picks up your book, that in the end, especially something with such a very heavy topic like this, that in the end, if you can encourage empathy, which we are very shorthanded right now, given the differences in the world and how people think and see each other, empathy goes a long way, but also understanding what someone else in some way goes through. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. having that, being able to conceptualize in some way the struggle that someone else is going through when you can't yourself understand what that's like because you don't live through that. But by being able to be exposed through it through literature allows you to understand a little bit more and become a bit more empathetic. And I think that that is an amazing thing to be able to do with a book. It's just incredible. So thank you for writing it.
You're welcome.
Thank you for bringing choice, Matt into our world.
All right. Now, well, last but not least, because we know you have to get to bed. It's very late over there. What are you working on? Anything new?
Heartstop.
Oh, wow.
I want to talk about a new children's book. Well, it's not new. It's newer than most of the other books that he had. I'm sorry. I didn't put it in the notes. But we had a conversation. You were talking about a book. Very quickly, tell us a little bit about The Vampire Who Lost Her Fangs. Give us the gist of it, because I think it's important to understand that not only are you a fictional writer of stories that can be entertained by anyone who's either 13 and above, but you're also writing children's books that are really cool and amazing on their own for children. So talk a little bit about that book before we move on to whatever you've got next.
Yeah, that's the book that Sasha wanted to talk to you guys about, because with all my children's stories, my son obviously plays a big part. And the story about the vampire who lost her teeth was a bedtime story. I just came up with that on the fly one evening when Sasha, he's in this age now where he's lost his first four teeth. And obviously for children, it's a huge rite of passage. Mm-hmm. And for some odd reason, I'm not sure if it's down to our amazing toothbrushing, he was relatively late to the game. Most of his friends in his class had already lost their teeth and you know, had those big holes up here in the front and were super proud of that. And he still had all of his teeth. And so he got really frustrated. So at some point, I wrote this story. Well, I didn't write it, but I told him the story. It was actually last Christmas. We were on a cruise and he wanted a bedtime story. And it was a little bit different at the beginning. The vampire was a boy originally. But I told the story and I said, like, you know, this is actually pretty good. So I wrote it down. I just took some notes on my phone. And then I came home and I started expanding on it, writing a little bit more, and I twisted it and changed it. And then the pandemic hit, and I was done with Matt, because Matt came out just around when the pandemic really hit and we isolated ourselves. And at some point I said, you know what, Sasha, because I started at the beginning of the pandemic, I did these live readings. I actually read three of my novels live on YouTube every night for like a month or two. And they're all on YouTube. So if you head on over to my channel on YouTube, you can still listen, see me with my son, with my husband. My husband's doing the whole camera thing. And so it was like a family thing we did at the beginning of the pandemic. And so I said, and somebody suggested, why don't you do something with your son for kids? And I said, as I think about it, I said, oh, okay, yeah, that might be a thing. So I started to think about doing a live video with Sasha about the vampire story. And say, oh, that would be cool. And, you know, let me just put it out as a PDF, attach it to the video so people can download the PDF. And I started, and then I reached out to Finn and said, you know, Finn, I would really, Finn is the guy who illustrated my previous two kids' books about the gay princes. And I said, Finn, would you do just a couple of drawings? You know, I need this and I need this and I need that. And he said, yeah, sure. And I also need this banner for the video, kind of a Giphy with bats and stuff. And then I sent the PDF because I hadn't begun recording the video with my son yet. So the idea was for Sasha to read the book and I would record him. And then we would do this little video and just give it away for free. So I sent the book, the manuscript, the PDF that I had created in iBooks on my laptop. I sent it over to my publisher and they kind of came back and said, what? Why wouldn't you let me put it out? And, you know, we would love to put this out as a real book. And why didn't you ask me? And I said, well, I didn't think it was worth it. And she said, oh, this is so beautiful. And so my publisher disappeared for like 48 hours. And then back comes this amazingly illustrated. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to actually look at it. But the way they've typeset the book, the insides of it, you know, with some words set in kind of like a blood font, with blood dripping from it. And it was so beautifully done. I said, okay, go ahead. You can have it. And so the book came out physically and as in electronic format way before I ever got to sit down with Sasha. But we ended up doing the video. It's on my website on the first page. You can actually see Sasha read the book to his audience. And he, you know, he named the vampire. He wanted it to be Elizabeth, so he named her. And yeah, so we've done this as a kind of a father and son project. Mm-hmm. And I'm really, I think it turned out really, really well.
You're creating a future writer.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Oh, yeah, he's actually already written stories. He's already written stories, one or two of them. And he writes a full page. I mean, not just A4, which is the equivalent to the US letter format here in Europe. A full page, you know, written, you know, I was like, wow. Yeah, I was so proud. And, you know, he comes up with stuff. He takes it from Netflix and YouTube and he creates his own little stories. It's pretty amazing. But it was a fun project. And the book is basically about a child who loses her first teeth. And being a vampire, she loses her fangs and she's afraid she'll never be able to suck blood again. So it's traumatic. But it has all the trimmings of a fun children's story for kids the age of, you know, 5 to 8 when they lose their first teeth. So, and it was a fun little project.
Well, I think it's incredible. You know, the fact that we have two things that we can, you know, share with our audience is amazing. So, Hans, I know it's late for you. I know that it's a school night. Sasha has to go to school tomorrow. So I don't want to keep you, but I want to thank you. Thank you for once again being a part of our show. It's been an incredible journey to have you come on year after year and share your amazing work. We're truly, truly.
We love you.
We do.
Yeah, I get.
Even though I talk a lot of shit about you all the time, so even throughout the show, but we do absolutely love you.
That's fine. We record everything so we can use it for future leverage. It's fine.
Exactly. That's how we do it.
Not a bad idea.
So thank you. Thank you for joining us. And, you know, keep doing what you do because we love what you put out there. And we're going to make sure that all of the content that you have provided, including the information for the book, for both of them, is put on tonight's post, along with links on where you can go and buy the books. So it's amazing.
Good. Well, say hi to my two fans. I know there's at least two of them listening tonight, Tracy.
So we actually, and only one we lost.
And Mama Kim.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah. Two. You're right.
Yeah, Mama Kim and Tracy.
Yeah.
We always talk about our like four followers.
Okay? Right.
Oh, four. Okay.
It's certainly a lot more than that. But once again, thank you, my friend.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good night, everybody, and have a great rest of your MLK day.
All right.
All right, darling.
Get some rest.
Take care. Thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right, ladies and gents, that, of course, was our amazing friend all the way from across the pond in Sweden, Hans M. Hershey, all the information for that book, of course, titled Matt, More Than Words, and the children's book will be on tonight's post. So thanks to Hans for joining us. So I love the fact that we can immerse ourselves in conversations so deep about his work, and the way he thinks and what he writes about really is amazing.
Yeah, no.
So
it's amazing.
So listen, guys, we don't want to bore you anymore. It's been a very long show, and we're just coming back from a very long break, as you all know, because we weren't here last week. So we're just going to fly by through the closings of today's episode. So unless you need to talk about something,
no, I'm good.
Bring it home. All right. Well, listen.
It's my turn.
That's right.
All right, everybody. So it's Mama Kim's Minute. Number one, Ralph Lauren dropped golfer Justin Thomas over a homophobic slur. Fuck him. Great job. Number two, Anderson Cooper recalls how he really truly came to accept himself as gay. Number three, Lady Gaga and Jennifer Lopez are to perform at Joe Biden's inauguration.
Right. I think Lady Gaga's doing the national anthem, and then Jennifer Lopez will be performing as one of the performers, which is great.
That's fabulous. Amazing. And number four, don't forget that while we are distracted by everything that's going on in the country, Trump continues to assault the LGBTQ plus rights. So definitely check out that article when we post it this evening.
All right. And so now what's next for us on the roster is on this day in gay history. Of course, where? Florida. When? January 18th, 1977, Dade County Commission enacted anti-discrimination law. The ordinance making it illegal to discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation passes by a vote of 5-3. Anita Bryant leads the effort to repeal. All right. Well, ladies and gents, that, of course, was our On This Day in Gay History, and now it's time to bring it home. I would like to thank you all for joining us on today's show. Make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as our episodes are published.
You got it.
I have a Moira thing going on right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, I know.
You can also support us on Patreon, which allows you, our listeners, to support the show with a monetary donation, which we collect monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. Next week, we're going to have a full episode of The Dish. We'll bring you the latest stories from the LGBT community and more so that you guys could stay informed.
And maybe Chris will be here. Thank you to our guest, Hans M. Hershey, for joining us once again on today's shoe, is what you wrote, but it's actually show. His latest book, Matt, More Than Words, is available now. The links will be posted on tonight's post as well. And can you remind us of his children's book, please?
It is called
The Vampire Who Lost
Lost Her Fangs. Yeah, it's called The Vampire Who Lost Her Fangs.
Yep. So we'll have that up there as well. And don't forget, get your discount for the future method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STD. Mm. The first of its kind doctor-developed formula gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. And now you can use code GAYTALK20 for 20% off, valid for one purchase or one subscription per person.
Looks like we're both struggling.
Tom, can we put a rubber on this?
Yes.
I was not struggling. All right. Our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under audio podcasts. It's also available as a free download on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio. Also, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0. Now I am struggling. Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0. Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gaytalk20.com. Tom, struggle away.
All right. Well, if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website. Click on the Contact Us tab located at the top of your web browser. There you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us. Our phone number is 334-GAY-TALK. If you need all those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget, we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. I would like to thank you all for joining us today. Thank you, guys. That is our show. Y'all have a good night. Bye! Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.